PCCW wanted to shut David up. And, well, you know, anything for Richard. In all seriousness, we delayed because David had to rush home for a family funeral, and we really appreciate him being able to reschedule on short notice after not an easy trip. Here's the format today. We're going to do 10 minutes, 10 minutes, 5 minutes, 5 minutes, and then David and Jake are going to ask each other a question, and then we're going to throw it open to the floor. And before we start, and it's going to start with David, we have a question for the floor. And I just want to see a indication by raising your hands, please. We're going to take a vote before, and we're going to take a vote after and see which way the crowd was swayed. Okay, so the proposition before us is the FCC believes that this original blackout period should have been implemented. That's the original blackout period as was originally proposed to come into effect at the beginning of this year. Please raise your hand if you believe or if you agree with that proposition. And if you don't. Jake, you have your work cut out for you. All right, David's going to start if his file hasn't re-encrypted itself, and I am going to let them know when they have 3 minutes, 1 minute, and then cut them off brutally. David, you're away.
Thanks very much, Tom, and I'm sorry Richard Lee couldn't be here. Since I'm kicking off, I'll just go through where we were trying to get to, and where we ended up. The original rule until April was no insider dealing 1 month before the results. Insiders decide when to announce the results, up to 4 months after the year end or 3 months after the six-month end, half-year end. The insiders only have to tell you when they're going to announce the results 7 business days before the results. So if they've been dealing, they can always delay the results. And the later the results, the more time they have to deal on the information advantage, what they know versus what you know. The proposed new rule, which was abandoned under political pressure, even after it had been passed by the SFC and the listing committee, was no dealing from the year end or the half year end until you announce your results. You still have to choose when to announce your results. The faster you announce your results, the more time you have to deal in the remainder of the year. And where we ended up on the 1st of April, but we're not joking, same as the old rule, except that the blackout for year-end results starts 2 months before you announce. And the later you announce, the more time you have for insider dealing, as before. Now, this graph shows the information gap between financial data that the directors should have if they're halfway competent and the information that you as an investor have from the latest annual or interim report. And the best time in the year, in fact, is 9 months after the year end when you would have the interim report in your hands and the information gap would drop to just 3 months. But you can see that for a large chunk of the year, you're at least 6 months out of date, and it's only when you get to 8 or 9 months out of date that the insiders have to stop dealing. So that's the old blackout rule. Those little yellow triangles are the periods when they can't deal. The maximum information gap under the new rule that was abandoned was reduced from 8 or 9 months to 6 months. And as a consequence, if you left it until the last possible date to announce your results, you would be blacked out for 7 months, and those are the two triangles here. But if you were competent at getting your results out, and you were incentivized under the new rule to do so, you should be able to get your results out in 60 days within the year end and 45 days after the half year end, and then you can see you have ample time during the year to deal and fairly small periods of restriction. Furthermore, if we were to move to quarterly reporting like mainland China did in 2003, then the information gap would reduce dramatically. Investors would often have only a 6-week disadvantage and never more than 3 months disadvantage whilst the insiders were allowed to deal. Beyond 3 months, they would be blacked out until they produced their quarterly results 3 times a year or annual results. And after the U-turn, what we ended up with, as you can see, is almost the same as before, but just a slightly larger blackout period on the final results for the year in months 3 and 4 there. Now, the opponents of this rule published a newspaper announcement. I'm keeping a copy of that. I've got the names. I know who you are. I'll be using that in future when we get into corporate governance discussions. But they said the blackout creates a window of opportunities for corporate snipers to destroy value. I say most companies have controlling shareholders. There's no risk of hostile takeovers. And value in any case can't be created or destroyed by shareholders. That's what management do. The blackout discourages talented individuals of the right caliber from becoming directors, they say. I say those people are of the wrong caliber if they think that insider dealing is a perk of the job. We want people who can manage companies, invest in them for the long term, and not regard insider dealing as a benefit. They say, but we've got laws against insider dealing, so we don't need the blackout rule. Just catch us if you can. But I say there are laws against death by dangerous driving, but we still need laws against speeding. If you've got an information advantage, that's often very hard to prove to the standards of criminal beyond reasonable doubt courts. But it's very obvious if you've been speeding, and if you've been dealing during the blackout period, it's a simple calendar test. This whole debate has produced some great to and fro in the media and in Legislative Council as well. David Lee said, someone really isn't using their brains. They are really stupid. He was talking about the listing committee and the regulators. He's a former executive counselor, but he also paid $8.1 million to settle insider dealing charges himself in the Dow Jones takeover without denying liability. Another person said they only listen to parties that they think have new ideas. Perhaps we should just have old ideas and the world would be a better place. That was Abraham Razak or Sheikh, the legislator for Concrete, talking about the listing committee in LegCo. Is he working for David Webb? Mr. Sheikh again talking about the head of listing at the stock exchange and basically accusing him of corruption. Mr. Sheikh, though, is working for 15 listed companies and real estate investment trusts, which paid him $5 million in the last year. Much more than he earns as a legislative councillor. But for once, Ronnie Chan, former director of Enron, was the good guy in all of this and said, look, you just get your financial results out early, perhaps with a slightly smug smile on his face, because he does get his results out pretty promptly.
3 minutes, David.
41 days for the interim results. And 44 days for his annual report. And many companies do achieve this, including, ironically, Bank of East Asia, which is run by David Lee. So it's doable. And the SFC said when they first addressed this issue to the stock exchange back in the summer of 2007 that they didn't think that this was unreasonable. They knew there would be some strong opposition. Perhaps they didn't know how strong it would be. But they had no qualms about being associated with it. That is my presentation within 10 minutes. Thank you. Oh, hang on. Names from the advertisement. I can't leave you without going through these. This was my reserve slide if I had more than a minute left. EasyNet Enterprises, controlled by an insider dealer called Kun Wing Yu. He's also been accused again, and he's currently going through the Court of Final Appeal trying to stop it. Chinese Estates, again, jointly controlled by an insider dealer. New World Development, and 5 other listed companies. They say there were 200, but if you boil it down, there's about 50 groups that oppose this. censured by the stock exchange for tipping off somebody about the interim results. Several analysts, in fact. Emperor Group, controlled by Albert Jung. I would say more, but I had a sudden attack of amnesia, so... But he's not even a director, so, you know, why is he complaining? He's not affected by the blackout period. Never been a director of these companies. Far East Consortium, still chaired by somebody who in 1993 was excused from trial on the grounds of dementia, which makes me wonder how many other demented chairmen we have in Hong Kong. And last but no means least, Li Ka-shing and seven group companies, who was found culpable of insider dealing back in 1986. I mean, he was a pioneer in every respect. So I will now leave it there. Thanks.
With a minute to spare.
Tom needs to reset his clock.
Go, Jake.
Sorry?
It's ticking.
Tom, David, ladies and gentlemen, fewer company directors in America and Europe seem to object quite so much to restrictions on director dealing, and I know why. It's because fewer of them have any shares in the companies they direct. I take your average director of a big boss of a big irresponsible European bank like RBS, or Fortis, or UBS, when it all goes pear-shaped. He draws one hand down his face like so to make sure he looks properly contrite in public. He says, oh, it's terrible. And then he drives off for the weekend to his country estate, which he doesn't lose because he never had any but a handful of shares in the bank anyways. He can afford to be righteous about director dealing. Well, I prefer the sort of company in which the directors have much more of their money invested than I do of mine. If the company goes down, they go down with it, and they trash their family name too. It makes them notably more prudent than the careless hirelings who so often inhabit the boardrooms in Europe and America. It's the sort of company we have more of in Hong Kong. But family shares in a listed company are rarely a passive investment. The family is always looking at opportunities, and those shares are routinely used for collateral, for family borrowings, or directly for purchases of assets. All of this is entirely normal and above board. Now, however, make it impossible for the family to trade in those shares for up to 7 months of the year, because auditors won't put on extra personnel to get the audits done in a reasonable time. I quite agree with David, that was Ronnie Chan's one good point. What you do then is you diminish the value of those shares. Stock that can only be dealt for 5 months of the year is worth less than stock that can be dealt for 12 months of the year. I can't give you a figure for how much less, but it could be quite a significant difference. And in this case, it's a prejudicial difference that George Orwell would understand. All shares are created equal, but some are less equal than others. If you are a director of a company, you must submit to an enforced inequality of the shares you own in that company. Now, I know that some of you will say this is just fine, let's have the tycoons get their comeuppance for a change. Oh, great, let's have that debate someday. But let's get it straight that the debate we're having here today is not about whether capitalism is a fair system or not. David accepts the legitimacy of private investment as much as I do. We're talking about what's fair or unfair within the system. And within the system, if we're going to impose a diminution in the value of some shares relative to others, then we'd better have a very good reason for it. We have to prove in this case that a significant number of directors in Hong Kong profit from foreknowledge of reported earnings. Has anyone proved anything of the kind? No. All I know of is a study that says that a certain number of directors may have tried to do it in Australia. And it's news to me that the present inhabitants of a certain previous convict colony have a reputation for ingenuity in criminal enterprise. Other than that, David will tell you that 94.6% of respondents to a survey on his website agree that directors, quote, often benefit by share dealing after the financial period has ended, but before results are released. Well, leaving aside that David's readers are rather unlikely to be a representative sample of the Hong Kong public, they agreed with him after a reading of polemic in which he labeled contrary views as absurd and perverse and alleged that company directors wholesale treat insider dealing as one of the perks of the job. David, if you ever caught anyone else citing a flawed survey like that as evidence for anything, you'd be stomping on them all over that very same website. Now, let me give you my credentials for telling you that those respondents are wrong. I spent almost 20 years in the investment business in Hong Kong before becoming a newspaper columnist. I started with Sun & Kay Securities as research manager in 1980. I was a dealing director of Sassoon Securities and of Morgan Stanley Asia and head of investment research at ABN AMRO Asia for 8 years. I tell you from my experience that if directors are not hiding any price-sensitive news from the market, and if their published accounts give a fair view of their company's affairs, then they have very little edge over others in dealing in their company's stock. If you don't believe me, take the experience of that fellow Say Suk, Lei Xiaokei, who was up in front of the microphones with the index over 30,000, saying that the market was going straight up and he and his sons were buying. He said it all the way down through 20,000s until he realized what a fool he was making of himself and then shut up at last. He didn't know. Take a look at those share price charts you see in the paper all the time that mark where directors deal and where they don't deal. You look at it and you say, why did he deal there? He would have lost money. Indeed, they don't know. Believe me, if your reported earnings fairly reflect the ongoing operations of your company, the market already knows what those ongoing operations are. You do not have a big edge, if any. If you really want, as a director, to have worthwhile odds on beating the market in your own stock, then there are only two ways of doing it. One, deal on knowledge of price-sensitive information not yet revealed to the rest of the market. And two, falsify your accounts. And here's the rub. We already have laws against these two practices. Now, David will tell you, and he has told you, that these laws don't really work very well. It's true. It usually is when people try to refine the Ten Commandments too far. But, so, are we going to do more? Are we going in that case to say, well, let's go and ban them from dealing at all because some of them might be dealing on inside information? Are we going to sit here trying to make these laws work, unworkable laws work, by breaching natural justice? All shares are equal, but some are now less equal than others, and increasingly less equal? And you know, it wouldn't have worked anyway. The market looks forward, not back. By this time of the year, 8 months in, right smack in the dab middle of the blackout period, investors are concerned with this year's earnings, not last.
3 minutes, Jake.
Do you really think the market went up last week because they changed their views about things that happened last year? And if we want to change that around, should we say, oh, well, now, if they do have a better idea of what their earnings will be coming up in this interim period, then after they've reported their final earnings, shouldn't we ban them again from dealing because they probably have or presume they have a better knowledge of what their earnings will be in the interim? Shall we have a 12-month blackout period? Because if you assume that any knowledge of earnings means an advantage they shouldn't have, and that we should legislate against it by having blackout periods, then you disenfranchise family-held shares. You simply disenfranchise them. They will always, on that reasoning, have a slight edge. Except I tell you, they don't. So, it's simple from my view. No one has a consistent edge on the market, not even directors in their own shares, unless they deal on inside information and falsify their accounts. Laws against such things may not be as effective as we would like them to be, but tinkering with them by infringing on natural justice is not the way to go. And that's what an extension of the blackout period would amount to. Be content with transparency, David. Let's put in some stiff penalties for directors who, quote unquote, forget to report their dealings and their shares. I'll be with you the whole way on that one. But let's not try to fix one possible wrong with another certain wrong. Thank you.
Great. Also with a minute to spare. Fantastic.
Matched.
You ready? Right. I have 5 minutes. Have you set your clock?
Hold on a second. I'm freezing here. Yeah, yeah. All right, go.
Jake, what transparency are you talking about? If companies were to publish their monthly management accounts, just put them up on their websites, if they were to tell us whenever they've lost a big customer, gained a big customer, lost a packet on Australian foreign exchange products on time, if they were to tell us all of these things, then all shareholders would be equal. But they're not equal. The insiders have a huge, as I've shown on my graphs, information advantage. And there have to be periods of the year when they should be presumed to be benefiting from that advantage and not permitted to trade. If we're to have any semblance of fairness and level playing fields in these securities, they are allowed to issue shares. The companies are allowed to issue shares for acquisitions. The directors are allowed to pledge their shares to banks. That's not dealing. They're even allowed to be granted share options because the stock exchange overlooked that point when they tightened the blackout rule. So they can be granted options with benefit of the forthcoming good news right up until the month before the results come out. The pledges of those shares, if they do pledge them, we're not going to know about them because the SFC has abandoned an attempt to try and introduce disclosure on that. Banks and brokers, if they receive these stocks, they might have a pledgee interest of 50% of the company. They don't have to say so. You'll only find out about it if a stock is suddenly dumped in a foreclosure in the market when the share price plunges 80% and people ask why there aren't regulations on disclosure. I'm surprised you didn't vote in my opinion poll, Jake. It was wide open to everybody. I know you're an avid reader, and you often disagree with what I say, and so do many of my readers, but on this point, they were obviously united.
Wait, 3 minutes.
So that opinion poll, certainly I have a point of view, which I expressed strongly in an article accompanying that opinion poll. But there were strong points of view expressed in full-paid newspaper announcements in virtually every newspaper in town. Many of you benefited from that. I hope they're helping pay your salaries. Publicity of the opposing view, I think, is not out of line. But clearly that's what the several hundred people who responded to the opinion poll felt. Now, again, equality. If we could, as individual shareholders, propose connected transactions with listed companies and try and get them past shareholders' approval, then we would be more equal with the directors who can. But by your arguments, Jake, and I see nothing which contradicts this, you're essentially saying there should never be a blackout period, not even the existing 1 month that we had under the old rules. Li Xiaoqi, of course, got his predictions famously wrong. It was quite entertaining watching him make these self-serving predictions, often tipping the stocks like Country Garden and so on that he'd bought in the IPOs. And that's fine if a shareholder wants to promote the stocks he believes in. I do that once a year in my Christmas picks. But he wasn't talking about his own stock. He's not an insider to the companies he was talking about. He was talking about the Hang Seng Index as a whole, and he got it wrong. That doesn't prove anything, Jake, about the ability of insiders to benefit from inside information. So I say again, all shareholders are not equal. All shares in voting terms may be equal, but certainly all shareholders are not. If we had much greater transparency, if we had mandatory quarterly reporting, then we could debate whether the blackout period should be a little bit shorter, raising that information gap that I showed you from 3 months to 4 months or whatever. If I could scroll back through the... it's not online.
One minute, David.
If I can scroll back through that... There we are. Now, hang on. Technology awaits me.
I think we've gone to TV mode.
You've turned it off. All right, we're on TV. 3 months was the proposal in that slide. We can debate whether it's 3 months or 3.5. It would be a lot better than the current 8 or 9 month information gap that we suffer. Right now, we're at towards the end of April. I'm still waiting for December results for companies, and I still only have June 2008 information. That was before Lehman went bust. A lot of things have happened since then. Thanks very much.
Oh, Jake.
David, you stress, you talk about insider dealing. And let me point out again that insider dealing is already an offense in law, as is falsifying the accounts. If people have been falsifying their accounts and dealing on that basis, we have the laws to prosecute them. What you have to demonstrate, and no one has yet done, is that by knowing some foreknowledge of what their reported earnings will be in absence of insider dealing or falsification of accounts, that they have an edge over the market. If you're right, that should be easily proved. There is not a single piece of evidence yet adduced, formal study, that proves the point. That should be the easiest study to make. It isn't there. These rules were adopted without any proper evidence or study of the case. You mentioned corporate snipers. I know who really likes this kind of a blackout period. I used to work for an investment bank. I shan't repeat the name again in case I get trouble for this. But when you take 70% of the stock off a market and leave only 30% there, certain investment banks lick their chops because they can really run a stock up and down when all of the family stock is kept off the market. This is an invitation to manipulation by big investment banks. And if you want to believe their PR departments that they don't do it, well, let me tell you, I sat on the desk for them often enough. I was investment research head for one of them, and they do. You don't get very far in an investment bank dealing desk by saying, well, my mommy told them not to do that. It just doesn't happen. You mentioned on this that we have laws against dangerous driving, but we still need laws against speeding. I agree, but what we don't need is laws that ban cars. This is effectively what it comes to. You may not drive for 7 months of the year.
Three minutes, Jake.
I've got to come back down every time again to that basic point. We have laws against insider dealing. We have laws against falsifying accounts. They are hard to administer. Every around the world, people have found those hard to enforce. They are enforced, but it's difficult to do. That is not a reason to say, oh, because these laws are difficult to enforce, we will stop any possible chance of insider dealing, not proven that it does exist, by stopping people from dealing in their shares at all. That is too far. That's an infringement of natural justice. Deal with the laws you have as best you can, but don't try to over-enforce them with laws that make no sense. They just become draconian. And this is what these blackout period laws consist of. So my question to... Well, we still have the time for a question here. Are we going to put those...
No, you have another 2 minutes before that.
No, well, I shan't take out my 2 minutes. I think I've made my points. I shall repeat them again otherwise over and over. We'll have the question later.
If you're ready to go to that, why don't you come take a seat? And David gets to ask the first question.
He does. Good.
As a preamble to my question, I would say, Jake, that that 70% is not like they trade it all day long in the market. They keep most of it locked up, so there isn't a big change in liquidity during blackout periods. There is not a great change in liquidity during blackout periods because that 70% is locked up. There are 1,200 other stocks that the director can trade in because he's not a director of those companies, so I don't think his human rights are being infringed. But my question for Jake, then, is if you had a choice between two currently, historically, identical businesses, identical stocks, this is a thought experiment, it doesn't exist in real life, but if you had that choice, one of them only reports its results once a year, because it's not listed, or it's listed in a special market that we would have here with perhaps the professional board, as it was going to be. And you had another stock that reports 4 times a year within 45 days of each period end. Which one would you rather own? And therefore, would you, if you would rather own it, I assume you would pay more for it. Isn't that the value of the information advantage that insiders have all year round?
The difficulty with thought experiments is that they were conceived by a fellow named Albert Einstein. And if any of you here understand the riddle of special relativity, aside from David, please tell me about it. It doesn't necessarily apply. What you'd have to prove, David, is that by having these quarterly accounts, the share prices generally of all stocks that report on a quarterly basis in Hong Kong would have been higher than they otherwise would have been. It's an impossible thing to do. It is conjecture alone.
Which one would you rather own? Answer the question.
That is the answer. You cannot pose a question. What would I rather own? 4 months stocks that report quarterly, or stocks that report every year? I think the question does not apply. I don't buy stocks on the basis of how often they report. The answer that he's looking for is 4 months. If stocks that report every 4 months or every 3 months are better stocks. Having been an investment analyst, I can tell you all that it will do is make analysts obsessed with the headline numbers, and less analysis and less research is done on those stocks than before. It should, on balance, be the right thing to do. Go for the stocks that report quarterly. I am not convinced that it necessarily works. But you've put a hypothetical question to me, David.
Would you like to put a hypothetical question to David?
No, I want to put a direct question to David. Give me the evidence. Give me the hard evidence that directors who have not taken advantage of inside information and who are not falsifying their accounts significantly profit over the period before the reporting period. Show me the hard evidence of it.
Well, of course, I would say that if you have not taken advantage of inside information, if the public knows everything that you know, then you can't profit from that inside information. It's the same as they have. My point is that companies and directors do have information advantage. They do know more than the public knows. And therefore, the later they leave it, the larger that gap gets, and the more likely it is that they can benefit from it.
We're going to open it up to questions from the floor, starting with David.
I have a question that is primarily for Mr. Webb. As someone who's quite interested in the rule of law and how it applies to Hong Kong, and as I understand it, and please correct me if I'm wrong, we have a basic assumption of innocence until proven guilty, except in the case of insider trading, which seems to be the argument here, is that if there is, if I can just refresh my memory, we have presumption of guilt if there is insider information that we simply cannot ignore the possibility. And so I would ask the question is this a case that is so specialized that it must violate the basic principle of innocent until proven guilty, or is it one that is actually violating that without necessarily intending to?
I don't believe it does violate that principle. There are two forums in which you can be sanctioned for insider dealing. One is the Market Misconduct Tribunal, which requires, it's a civil tribunal, you cannot be jailed, you cannot be fined, you can only be ordered to pay back the profits you made or the losses you avoided, plus costs. And that one works on a preponderance of probabilities like other tribunals in Hong Kong. And the other route is the criminal courts, where you have to prove your case beyond a reasonable doubt, which is why there have been so few criminal prosecutions since it became a criminal offence in April 2003, but they have now done two or three of them. But the blackout rule is a contractual, non-statutory listing rule between a company and the stock exchange. It even allows for exceptional circumstances, pressing financial needs, for example, in which the director can get consent to sell shares during the blackout period. So I don't think it conflicts with the judicial principles that you mentioned. But it is rather like, and that's why I drew the analogy with the speeding limits. You're not necessarily driving dangerously if you break the speed limit, but it does put you on test. And the whole rule on speeding is designed to prevent the outcomes of death by dangerous driving that can sometimes result from it.
Jake, you want to respond?
I think David Arir's point is absolutely right. There must be a presumption of innocence. Until you can prove that the director has benefited from inside information or price-sensitive information not made available to the rest of the market, or from falsifying the accounts, there must be an assumption of innocence, and you cannot remove him the right to deal in that stock for a prolonged period. You have to prove that knowledge of earnings when those earnings fairly reflected market conditions, allowed him to make a great deal, or allowed significant numbers of directors to make significant profits. There's been no proof of that at all.
A question in the back corner.
Eric Floyd, I've been in investor relations head at two different Hong Kong companies. Before I ask my question, I'll start with a comment. I recall that when I was in New York at the old J.P. Morgan, correct me if I'm wrong on this, the rule at that time, 15 years ago, and I don't know if this was a J.P. Morgan rule or an SEC rule, is the only time the most senior executives of J.P. Morgan could trade in the shares was in the 2 weeks immediately following a financial announcement. And they were barred from trading in those shares for all of the rest of the year on the presumption that they had insider information. I don't recall if that's an SEC rule. David may know better than I. My question is this. David seems to be saying that there's an unfair advantage for the directors if they're allowed to trade prior to announcing results. Jake seems to say there's an unfair advantage that other people are allowed to keep trading while the directors can't trade. So why don't we just have a rule that no one can trade until results are announced? And then we would solve the problem. It would be no problem.
I'll take your first question. The other one wasn't serious. I think what you're referring to was probably the in-house rule of J.P. Morgan, and it's a common one in the industry. In fact, I did have emails about this saying, what's the big deal in Hong Kong? We are only allowed to deal 2 weeks after our results come out. That's the only time when we think we're safe from class actions, because if it later turns out that something bad was going on in the company, and we're going to face a lot of litigation and expensive court time trying to prove that we didn't know about that. So a lot of companies in the States, because of the different legal system there, because of the deterrent from class actions and SEC civil actions and so on, set themselves this brief period after each quarter. And that still provides 4 times a year. On average, you're never more than about 1.5 months away from an opportunity to trade. And I think that is perfectly adequate, frankly, if you're a long-term investor, director of the company, but you wish to support your company by and you know, put your money where your mouth is by investing in it. That's the underlying principle. For all your other investments, of course, you can trade any time you like during the year. And no, I don't think you should be stopped 4 times a year since you don't have any inside information on those companies.
There was another question from Jake, and then we'll take a question from Floor and then Francis. Go ahead, Jake.
This gets back to the point that I open this argument that for directors and employees of banks in the United States or Europe who don't own any shares, only have options to invest when they quit the banks, that's easy to say. We won't bother to deal with these shares. They don't own many. It isn't really important. We're talking in Hong Kong about family companies where the company owns something like 70, the family owns 75% of the stock. And those families use that stock, and it's entirely legitimate that they use that stock. It makes much more difference in this town than it does in a New York. Far more difference. And it's much more unfair to them.
From the floor.
Martin Sabine, I have to admit I'm an investment banker, I guess. I was a lonely hand for Jake, so I suppose my question is for David. And the question is, I believe directors always know more than the market about at least the operating results of a company. Certainly by September, October, with orders in hand, they'll have a very good idea about the year end. So actually the year end's arbitrary too. 1 month is arbitrary. But I suppose the other big adjustments we've seen this year have come from last-minute write-downs and other things. I suppose we have to believe Hong Kong Bank that they didn't put a profit warning out because it was only 2 or 3 days before the announcement that they actually agreed the provisions and so on. So, I mean, 1 month is arbitrary and catches something, but your proposal for the year-end is equally arbitrary and doesn't really have any logic to it. So I think what we should do in this case is concentrate on, as Jake mentioned, price-sensitive information, listing rule 1309, I think it is, that just puts an obligation on directors to release price-sensitive information sensibly and promptly and not do what we tend to do. And when we think there's an abuse in Hong Kong, we bring in a new rule. Actually, we don't need to. What we need is proper enforcement of the existing rules.
But I would just say that if we did have existing rules on mandatory quarterly reporting other than on the GEM board, it's amazing that all the little companies can do it, but the big ones can't with their greater resources, then that gap would come down a lot anyway. You're right, Martin, that focusing on the six-month information gap, which is where you set it by looking at the year-end and half-year-end, is arbitrary. We could, you know, the listing committee could have said 5 months, in other words, from the end of November for a company that reports in December. They could have said 5 months is the maximum acceptable information gap for investors. They could have said 4 months. Of course, the further back they go, the less the period of time in which insiders can deal each year. And they had to strike a balance, partly in terms of what they think the market would accept. Unfortunately, as we now know, the market wouldn't even accept a six-month information gap as being the maximum. They want 8 or 9 months.
Jake, did you want to say how much you liked that question?
I was going to say so, but previously, that Martin, I remember being about 25 years ago, walking me through the IPO of Wing Lung Bank and providing me an education on it. The point is absolutely right. Let's make laws, let's enforce the laws we have. We have laws against inside and insider dealing. Let's enforce those. Let's enforce our laws against falsifying accounts. But let's have the presumption of innocence where we do not have proof that inside dealing took place and that profits were made.
Jake, would you support a gun, relaxing gun laws in Hong Kong, allowing everyone to own one? Is that where you're coming from on this? Because it's not illegal to own a gun in America. It's only if you actually shoot someone with it.
Are you trying to say that perhaps we should ban shares in Hong Kong because someone could deal with inside information on shares? Let's have no share trading.
Your argument is because insider dealing is illegal, we don't need any other checks and balances on the ability to insider deal.
Well, if you wish to tell me that the laws on insider dealing are problematic in their enforcement, and to point out that they have become more severe over time, they are likely still to be amended further at some point. And what we need to do is amend them. I can throw out my own simile here. It's like saying, well, let's cure rabies. Why not kill all dogs? Do the job very quickly.
All right.
It's like the one you made earlier, David, about laws against dangerous driving, but we still must have laws against speeding. Yes, but not laws against banning cars.
Enough similes. Francis.
Francis Moriarty, RTHK. I spend precious little time around Exchange Square. I spend most of my time, more than anybody should, between Shader Garden and Statue Square. And so I rely on LegCo's font of wisdom on financial services, Chinpoy Chung, for this question.
Don't we all? Yeah.
And he said, if you can't trade on inside information, what's the point of trying to get inside?
Could I
ask each of you to respond to that?
Yes. One of my old bosses once said to me, if you don't have inside information, what's the point of dealing?
Can I point out that he did wind himself inside jail?
As somebody who's been inside, he should know.
The ultimate insider.
Which proves the laws do work sometime. Where did you get with your inside information, Mr. Jim?
The law was not on trading. It was on related to falsification of instruments.
That's right. It was forging signatures on share transfers, and a connected transaction was involved, I believe.
Edith.
No, you didn't know.
Hi. I think Jake's observations raise a more general point, which is, should markets be regulated on the basis of the existing players? In Hong Kong, most companies are the opposite of widely held. They're controlled either by families or, in the case of many of the mainland listed companies, by the state. So should regulation aim towards creating a kind of a global template, or should it be aimed at making life easy for the local group of players?
I'll take it first, or do you want to go first?
Jake.
I'll take it. you have to adapt in some places the laws to their, the rules to their local circumstances. I mean, to give you one example where I think Hong Kong's gone off by taking global laws, it's on the accounting rules, whereby companies have to reflect changes in the values of their properties to their profit and loss accounts every year. This creates unreliable profit earnings constantly because they go up and down. It's just complying with a global rule that didn't really work and doesn't fit itself to circumstances. We have to accept that here we have lots of family companies. It's not against the law for a family to list the shares in its companies. We have to be aware of that when we start pushing blackout periods, that the effect on here is much greater than it would be abroad. And I think any regulatory authority must take into account local conditions such as these.
I think there are two parts to the answer. One, it is important to have common standards in accounting, because otherwise you can't compare companies which are listed in different markets, but which are in the same industries, same businesses. Of course, we can debate what those standards should be, and Jake has a point of view on one of those standards, but I do think it's important to have commonality in that. But also, we do need to take into account the structure of our market in making regulation. One good example of that would be independent directors. The concept was imported from the UK, but in Hong Kong, it's pretty much always the controlling shareholder who gets to choose the independent directors because he votes on their elections in general meetings. And so if you own 75% of the company, you get to choose which rubber stamps you would like in your boardroom, and it makes the whole thing a farce. Until we have independent directors elected by independent shareholders, albeit nominated by the board if they want, then we won't really have accountability or mandates for independent directors in the boardroom. It's only in rare circumstances, like HKX, where there's no major shareholder, that you can be a truly independent director.
I agree entirely with David about having more independent directors, in case you want to.
I think we can take at least one more question right here, John.
My name's David McIntyre. In an IPO, okay, Jake Vanderkap Limited, Hong Kong, Macau, whatever, and you want to build your business, we invest in it, we hope to grow together with you so you can expand your business. And then with insider dealing and everything, you take advantage of us that invested with you and basically jump in this new car that you bought and run over us. So what's the point of, you know, wouldn't you want to treat your investors and your shareholders fairly and let them know your information right away, or and not basically take advantage of them and say, thanks for your money, now I'm going to run away?
My point exactly. I mean, you're confirming what I say, that I'm for the laws on insider dealing. You must provide to the market the news of all price-sensitive information immediately. One of the biggest problems we had with CITIC, why they're legitimately in a stink of a mess. And you must not falsify your accounts. But this is different. What we're talking about here is something different. It's saying that there is a presumption of guilt in the fact that you dealt before an earnings announcement, that your knowledge of an earnings announcement to come, in the absence of any release of sensitive information to the market, in the absence of any falsification of the accounts, gives you an enormous edge over other investors. And I say, I don't believe it's true, but more than that, it has never been proven true. There is no argument. No, this was adopted with no justification at the time whatsoever. And that, to me, says presumption of innocence. You can't do that unless you prove it.
Jake, I have a quick process question before we see how many people have...
You want to respond to that?
I think the problem you're hinting at is that whilst some managements do go out of their way to keep their investors informed, partly because they want to use their equity for expansion, they're on an expansion path, as soon as they've finished that and they're more inclined to privatise it, they would rather that the share price just decays so that they can offer a premium and still get a very big discount to the fair value of the stock when they privatise it. They can be good one day and bad the next, and if the rules aren't there to actually require the disclosure, then they won't.
Just a quick process question for you, Jake, before we see how many people have changed their minds. As misguided as you believe that the original blackout period was, the tycoons did sleep through the consultation process. Was it right to give them an opportunity to exercise a a veto after the fact?
There's a technicality of whether they had the exact veto. No, this is going too far. The whole process went through the way it should have been gone. I think there was an element of it slipped through nonetheless. But quite clearly, if you've done the thing the way it should be done, then you should have gone ahead with it as done. I regret the way that that the tycoons, shall we name it, stepped all over this one without really providing much argument or good argument at the time for doing so. And I particularly find it ironic that the effort was headed by David Lee, who is the first company in Hong Kong to report every year and would have the least problem with a blackout period. But yeah, I'm not in favor. No, of course not. That went the wrong way.
Okay. We want to put the question again. The question is that the FCC believes that the Tibet Special Autonomous Region... sorry. That was last week's question. The FCC believes that the original blackout period should have been implemented. How many are in favor of that proposition? Looks roughly the same to me. And against? Jake's daughter raised her hand belatedly.
Thanks, Jessica.
Well, I think you both held your original positions. We have, as is traditional, a couple gifts here. For David, I've got... No. Actually, these are special gifts. Just for this occasion, we have some PCCW proxy forms for David.
and vote often. Yeah.
And also for Jake, I have a big check from the tycoons. And they don't know this yet, but we're going to do this again next Thursday. We're going to talk about the PCCW appeal hearing. In all seriousness, I would like to thank both David and Jake for a very entertaining luncheon event. They both put a lot of time and effort into preparing their arguments, and so we thank them for that.
Thank you.
David. My PCCW thumb drive, I should say.
We
could bring you up every time there's something going on.
I'm Richard. I'll be expecting fun the other week. Richard Morrow.
Hi, Richard.
How's it going?
Good.
Thanks very much.
Everyone's approaching you. I'll give you a call, okay, if you're interested. We're glad to get someone to come in and talk about corporate governance.
Okay, give me a call. It's China.
Yeah, okay.
Thanks very much. Sorry for all the hassle. It's his fault.
Oh, right, that's Jake as well.